Welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are... This is Eric.
And by the way, you know, when you're telling these little stories, here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
This is Brother Jay.
You ask me if I have a God complex? Let me tell you something. I am God.
This is true.
There is a storm coming like nothing you have ever seen! And not a one of you is prepared for it!
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case keep your eyes open and watch the road and, you know, anyway. Welcome. This is Eric.
This is Brother Jay.
This is Drew. And tonight we're going to talk about our first in the series of Planet of the Apes movies. We have boyfriend Jesse to either blame or thank for this. Tonight it's 1968's Planet of the Apes, directed by Franklin Schaffner, who directed Patton, The Boys from Brazil, and Papillon.
Papillon, the butterfly.
Screenplay by Rod Serling and Michael Wilson, based on a novel by Pierre Boulez. He also wrote Bridge Over the River Kwai, and he considers this his worst novel.
So I think boyfriend Jesse would probably happily take the blame for this.
I'm going to give a spoiler. I'm actually having a good time. I am four-fifths of the way through the first series.
Wow. Oh, wow. I'm only the first movie in. I didn't want to blaze down the path for fear I might mix the movies together when we discuss them.
Yeah, that's definitely a risk. But I don't want to prejudice you against the rest of the movies.
I have never seen this before, apparently.
So you'd never seen this before, but were you aware of the ending?
I've seen the ending because it's okay. Iconic, but I had no idea until halfway through the movie that that's how the movie was going to end. But I didn't connect the dots very early. But I was able to connect the dots halfway through, so I don't know if that counts for anything.
Yeah, this, as it turns out, now that I've seen this movie several times recently, at first I thought, well, hey, you know what, I'll wait. Brother Jay? Yeah, why don't you give your first reaction to this movie, having never seen it before?
So, I really ratcheted back my expectations based on when this movie was made. So, I made a concerted effort to give a little leeway to when this movie was actually produced and generated, because obviously there was a lot of different techniques, and there wasn't as much advanced makeup and artist...
like special effects?
Yeah, special effects weren't very big. Makeup wasn't very sophisticated still. Clearly, music and soundtrack and score wasn't really integral. So I kind of backed off my expectations a little to give a little leeway, I think. So I may be a little generous than normally, but just because I'm trying to give this a chance without... I'm trying to put myself kind of in that time as much as I could.
And?
It wasn't a bad movie. It wasn't a great movie, but I don't think it was a bad movie. It had some issues. It's dated, for sure. It's dated. The topics, though, it is not a subtle movie at all. There is no subtlety. This is like a million pairs of scissors. So, also, the music, instrumentation, and the accompanying music is really questionably bad for the most part. Boyfriend Jesse even commented at one point, he's like, "God damn, more xylophones! Get over it!" So.
That was a choice, by the way.
I'm sure it was. It didn't ratchet up my tension as much as it ratcheted up my ire. So I got tense, but just for a different reason, perhaps.
I think this is described as having the first complete atonal score to a movie. Oh. Which I guess I'll take that off your birthday list, the Jerry Goldsmith score to Planet of the Apes.
Well, you can leave it on the birthday list, but just remember, there is always return birthday gifts.
Okay. So.
Once you start down a path.
Overall, what was your opinion? I mean, did you enjoy yourself?
It was entertaining. I didn't hate the score. I hated parts of the score. Yeah, part of it was fine. Again, the movie was a little dated. It was not subtle. There was no subtlety. The social commentary was thick. So there was definitely... This movie had no nuance. But the story was... It kept my attention. Actually, I thought the makeup that they did do for the costumes was actually really, really good, considering the time especially. So,
of a $2 million budget, $3,500,000 was makeup.
I have figures this is $5 million, almost $6 million budget.
Oh, okay, maybe. But yeah, it was but slightly under $500,000 budget for makeup. Although I think they actually advertised that it was $1 million in makeup effects. But that was a lie.
I thought it was actually really well done, the makeup. So I was impressed by that, especially considering it was 67, 68. So that was pretty amazing.
We can also credit Roddy McDowall for leading the way in having the characters do their own little facial tics and body tics so that they could distinguish themselves and their characters through all the makeup. Because that was a big challenge for everybody.
And well done, from my opinion. And it was some really good performances. Again, the story was a little, because of the lack of subtlety, it was not a very sophisticated story. So it was fine and entertaining. It wasn't the caliber of movie, I think, that I have been accustomed to watching when I want a good movie. So I'll give this is a good B movie. This isn't an A movie, but this is a good B movie. Having never seen it before, I don't know that I would put this on rotation to watch ad nauseum, but having never seen it before, at least in my adult consciousness or even adolescent consciousness, I've never seen this. I may have seen it as a kid. Parts of it look familiar and I knew all the names. So either referentially from other movies, and I may have seen the later movies because there was five, right?
Yeah, well, there's also a TV show.
And I may have seen the TV show. So I'm familiar with the characters and familiar with the names and familiar with kind of the plot basis. So, but I had a good time. It was interesting. I mean, it was not, I had, Blu-ray, DVD, compliments of you, Brother E. So I got to watch some of the special features and play the game that's on the DVD, which is silly, but fun. So it was a fine experience for me.
Brother Drew, was it worth it? We just go right to housekeeping. Yeah, no, anyway, so Drew, what's your first reaction?
Yeah, this movie's really heavy-handed. Charlton Heston's character is not likable at all, I think. Yeah, I think despite everything, I enjoyed it. I mean, it's a silly, silly movie that makes weird choices. I mean, like Jason said, it's obvious what they're doing and what they're commenting on very early on. But yeah, I'd be really interested to like hear what the direction was for some of the scenes, because I don't know what Charlton Heston is doing in a lot of this movie.
I don't know that he knew.
Now, I have a question for him being a movie star. Is Charlton Heston a good actor?
Look, he was amazing in Tombstone.
That's the only credit I have him listed in the plot synopsis of Tombstone.
It's, again, it's the prism of time. I think he may have been a great actor at the time. Retrospectively, I don't think so. And there are also definitely better actors at the time. Again, I think he was a fine B actor, but he's not first string material.
So there's that period of Al Pacino's career where he was just yes. Like the screaming guy.
Yes.
That may be Charlton Heston's entire career.
Yeah, or maybe like, I just haven't seen enough Charlton Heston movies to realize there is another part of his career.
I mean, have you seen The Ten Commandments?
I have not.
I mean, that's mostly also like a really big, bombastic performance.
Well, like in Ben-Hur.
Very melodramatic. Yeah.
I mean, all those big, gigantic movies. Yeah, his performance in this movie was not subtle at all. In fact, most of the apes' performance, well, not all of them, but some of the apes' performances, especially Roddy McDowall and, Kim Hunter as Zira, they actually had fairly subtle performances.
Yeah, holy crap. I looked up who is Zira, and it's Stella Kowalski.
Yes. And she was in Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil.
Was she really?
Yeah.
Yep.
She's a serious actress, and Roddy McDowall is great. I think it's going to be flavored by the fact that, okay, so I watched it and I enjoyed it, but then I also did kind of jump ahead a little bit because we're going to tackle all five of these in a pretty short order. And they get shorter and they get less budget as they go along. But the only thing I wanted to flavor is that attitude you had, Jason, going into it.
Mm-hmm.
Hold on to that attitude.
Okay.
You're going to need it.
Double down on the lowering of expectations. Well,
okay.
Yeah, again, I don't want to jump ahead, except that this is the first movie, and this is like an extended Twilight Zone episode. You could definitely see the Rod Serling ending of this movie. Because mm-hmm. the book has two separate planets. The book is actually... do you want to know about the book? Spoilers?
Yes.
Yeah.
So, do they spoil the movies?
No.
Okay. Then I'm fine with you spoiling the books then.
Yeah, well, no, just one book. And basically it is... It's all done in a message in a bottle in space. These people who are flying through space see a bottle that they pick up, and there's a message in it, and they read it, and that's the story. And it's about these Earth people that fly to a planet that orbits the star Betelgeuse, and in the Orion constellation, and it has these things with apes are evolved differently, blah blah blah, and. The Taylor character, which I don't think is named Taylor, escapes with the Nova character and basically goes back to Earth and to find out that the very similar thing has happened there too. And so the message he left in the bottle is basically a message for any travelers to avoid both planets. And the ending of the book is that it turns out they were the people that found the bottle were chimpanzees and thought the whole thing was ridiculous because humans could never write such a thing.
Dun, dun, dun.
So there's a little twist.
That's where we get the lack of subtlety. Though.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's a social commentary.
Well, and I think it was interesting for me to have them really discuss kind of the science of traveling at the speed of light or close to it. As a concept, that wasn't commonly... discussed, I don't think, in the 60s in the average household. Maybe, but I don't know. Just seems like it wouldn't have been a really common knowledge thing. May have been a concept that may have been beyond some people.
Well, it's the theory of relativity, right? So it's the 20s, right? So it's only like 40 years after the discovery of such a thing, or the proposal of such a thing.
Yeah, but how much had that entered the lexicon and the education system in the United States by that point? Not greatly. I mean, I'm sure it was collegiate level, but I don't know how conceptually that would have been in the average household. So that was interesting.
There's a surprising amount of stuff, world building, that the movies do that they keep straight in a really interesting way. Like I'm interested in watching the Tim Burton movie and then the more recent movies to see if they take that same path or they veer off. Okay. Yes. That's a very good callback. So, okay. Anyway, I interrupted you.
New Year's Eve, boyfriend Jesse and I were, want to watch some television before, midnight because we were, it was just Derek and Jesse and myself were in the house. It was a really quiet New Year for us. And being that we don't have live TV, there's no ball drop to watch for us. So, we were going through Netflix as to what to watch. And so we watched the first episode of The Twilight Zone.
The very ever first episode?
Yeah. It was about an army guy that doesn't remember anything. He's got amnesia and he's in this town and there's no people.
Hmm.
It's abandoned.
Like a Silent Hill kind of situation?
I'm not familiar with the reference, so.
Anyway, did you enjoy the experience? Are you a Twilight Zone fan?
I do. I am. I like Twilight Zone. Jesse was familiar with the movie. He, I think, knew of the show, but had never seen it.
The Twilight Zone movie?
The Shatner movie. Yeah, he specifically remembers the little kid making the woman not have a mouth.
Yes. His sister, I think, right?
Yeah. Yes. The scene that many people remember. So, I think he liked it. He thought that the show was obviously very different. It's beautiful. It's in black and white. And on Netflix, it's gorgeous. It is amazingly good. At least from my perspective. So that it was interesting that we had watched Twilight Zone, Rod Serling. And then when we were watching this movie, you know, the first thing that comes up is, you know, Rod Serling. So just kind of a
Yeah, this is a gorgeous movie.
It is.
I mean, maybe it's the print actually helps, but it is really pretty. Like the scene in the lake where the spaceship crashes, that's pretty great. Mm-hmm. So, shall we dive into the plot? It moves pretty fast.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's a pretty thin plot.
It's not much.
Yeah, well.
There's not much there.
We start off with Colonel Taylor, Charlton Heston, from Tombstone, who is the captain of a ship, spaceship, that's got a, 18-month mission? Something like that? 2-year mission? They are 6 months out, and he's dictating his captain's log before he puts himself into stasis.
Right. It was supposed to be 18 months out and 18 months back.
Okay. And so
it was supposed to be, it would have been 3 years.
So they leave in 1972.
But they were also equipped to just start a new civilization.
I don't know how that was supposed to work with three guys and one girl. But
yeah, I was a little disturbed on that point because I thought
there's some weird gender dynamics on the script.
Yeah, you know, and they have one woman and three dudes, and that's pretty ill balanced. And what happens if she dies in childbirth?
What happens if she dies? Just, you know. Because of a funky thing in the mission, like before they even get there. Spoiler.
I wrote that Ansa has some nice leather chairs on their ships.
Yeah, I love Ansa. I love the fact that he's just smoking a cigar, puts it in his pocket, save for later. And the whole thing is about time. So in the 6 months that he's gone, they've traveled 700 years in the future on Earth time.
It's not just about time, because he starts off right with the social commentary about war and starvation.
Well, in 1972, that was a big deal. Or, sorry, 68. 67, yeah.
Yeah, he didn't waste any time going right into it.
No, and he's certainly ham-fisted about his monologues.
Yeah, I wrote, it's a good thing that Stuart didn't survive, because she'd have never fit on the raft anyway.
That's true. Yeah, it was a pretty dinky raft.
They would have just had to Jack Dawson, one of the dudes.
So, to Jack Dawson?
From Titanic?
Oh, okay, sorry.
I've never seen Titanic.
Like, So, you've never seen Titanic? We should see it, it's good. You'd be surprised.
I would I?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Hey, look, it's probably my favorite Billy Zane movie.
That's just crazy talk.
Okay, so...
Do television shows count? Because he was great in Mad Dogs.
Huh.
Billy Zane was awesome in Twin Peaks.
Turns out he's pretty compelling, actually. I'm a Billy Zane fan. In fact, if only Billy Zane and Jeff Fahey could do like a buddy cop movie.
Odds are they have.
It's true. Okay, so after a big long speech full of melodrama, Taylor puts himself to sleep and gets awoken not by the friendly voice of Hal, but instead by crash landing into some sort of body of water. And they manage to get out of the craft just before the whole thing sinks. But
three of them do.
Yes, the one has died, and actually, I thought the makeup effects were great for her.
Yeah,
she
it was a little shocking.
She died like pretty nearly after he put himself to sleep because she was all mummified looking.
Yeah, it's also a bummer that she died because there was a bad seal or something. Somebody poked a hole in the bag.
Yeah, well.
They were going to poke lots of holes in her bag. So.
Yeah, that's weird. But so they jump out and they paddle to shore. And there's a lot of scenery here. And I think this is all like Southern California, Arizona scenery. Maybe New Mexico.
Arizona,
yeah,
mainly.
And apparently it was... they had a hard time filming this movie as far as creature comforts. Charlton Heston had the flu during part of this. And he said getting sprayed down with the fire hose didn't help his mood. And he said that even
I bet.
Even rubber rocks hurt when you get hit with them. So, and he spent most of the movie mostly naked. This is actually one of, I think there's only two movies that have gotten a G rating. This movie got a G rating with nudity in it.
With the full frontals?
Yeah.
Like, tackle out.
Well... That
would never happen today.
No.
People would lose their shit. No, titties are fine, but dick is not.
I'm going to take that quote out of there.
You're going to take it out and do what with it?
We'll loop it, put some music behind it, call it good.
Ass and titties.
It's also the most ironic coming from you.
Well, exactly. So
I see. I get it. Okay. They only have 72 hours of groceries, though.
Yes. And
what kind of stupidity is that? They come, they're traveling light years and they only have 3 days of food. That seems.
I had some questions about their preparations.
Preparation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, they have 3 days worth of food. And, I don't know. I like the red light, green light test, the atmosphere test. That's so nice. Not sure what they were going to do if it was a red light on the atmosphere.
Exactly.
But
they didn't seem to be carrying any water.
3 days. Some sort of.
No, I know, but yeah. Still, you're on a planet and you don't know if the water's even fit to drink. They don't seemingly have any water up here. But again, we don't know what we're in the cases, so who knows?
Yeah, and maybe it's because of the rough landing, but they don't seem to have a lot of. I mean, they seem to be squabbling amongst themselves from the very beginning.
And they don't have any clothes.
Well, they have that one set. It's wash and wear.
Because Taylor is a dick.
Well, he is. Totally. Yeah.
He is a grade A asshole from the jump.
Yeah. So they're walking around some rocky desert area after planting a flag. Oh, and by the way, Taylor, not only is he a dick... But he is also like a nihilist or a fatalist. Mm-hmm. I mean, he has already figured that the Earth has fucked itself up and this mission's going to fail too. I mean, he's like, might as well give it a shot, but we're all going to probably die.
Yeah. And the first really odd choice is his weird laugh at the flag.
He's like, silly rabbit.
Well, and then they go walking through the desert and they find a living thing. And immediately ripped the living thing out of the ground.
Well, I also love the fact that, okay, so I don't know about you guys, but when the big boulder falls down, the first thing I thought of was, oh shit, this is like Galaxy Quest. They're going to have to start fighting off the big rock guys.
Yeah.
They were barely equipped to run away from a boulder that rolled down a hill. They would not be equipped to deal with like actual combatants. Rock people. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, if Zorn had showed up, they'd have been fucked.
Oh, man. And so this is the reason why I was warning you guys ahead of time, or Jason ahead of time, that this is a long movie, is that there's a, or that I, that to expect like a travelogue a little bit, is because there's a lot of scenery. We don't see apes until like 40 minutes into the movie. Or 30 minutes in. And Roddy McDowall, who's the second billed actor, isn't seen till like 45 minutes into the movie. So we finally get to those creepy Blair Witch scarecrow things.
Yeah.
I mean, that's creepy.
It was very horror-esque.
Only for the audience.
Yeah. There was no deterrent for them.
Yeah. Taylor and his crew did not give a fuck.
No, that's true.
Yeah, you would think it would cause a little bit more concern.
Well, you wouldn't immediately go past the scarecrows and then get naked?
Yeah.
Pretty sure. Pretty sure that would not be my reaction.
You have a bunch of rare gear on a planet where you don't have any resources and you're going to not guard your clothing. You're only covering to the atmosphere and the gear, survival, food, water, rations, whatever medication you may have. That seems really kind of foolish.
Yeah. Two people go skinny dipping, one person guards, and you swap out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I would say you would tap out, but you have to be careful when you're doing that, you know, tackle out.
So. Yeah, well, like, without Stuart, you know, the odds are good, but the goods are odd. So they're out there having their skinny dip, enjoying themselves. Because they hadn't had a good skinny dip in at least 18 months.
Except when they landed in the lake.
Yeah, well, there's that. Yeah. Yeah. Also, there's a lot of, well, never mind. I think I may have gotten confused with a different movie, but.
See, that's what I'm talking about.
No, you're right. You're right about that. So, anyway.
Because my compulsion, my OCD was like, I have to watch all of them right now.
Yeah, I know.
And I just avoided that. Because otherwise I knew it would be, I would just merge them all and conflate them all together in my head.
Well, yeah. So immediately when they go skinny dipping, then the natives steal their clothes.
The humanoid species of plant eaters.
Yeah. They're just people. People don't speak.
They really maligned the vegetarian lifestyle. They besmirched a plant-based diet.
No, actually. Turns out a plant-based diet was the way to go. The more evolved species were the ones that had the plant-based diet. In fact, there was nary a piece of jerky in the whole movie, I don't think. So, yeah, so they see these people harvesting food from trees, blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden, the real fun starts, and we end up seeing apes on horseback.
With guns.
Yes.
Apes with guns.
By the way, to people, and I realize the movie is, I don't know, 50 years old or something, but any movie, or anytime you see a poster for this movie, or a cover of, like, artwork for this movie, that shows the Statue of Liberty, fuck them. You can't give away the end scene. You can't. It's just wrong. It'd be like having a like the Sixth Sense and having Haley Joel Osment pointing at Bruce Willis saying, "I see dead people." I mean, it's just wrong. So anyway. Yeah, so the movie is not subtle, but it's also fairly violent. I mean, it's sort of bloodless, but, you know.
Can we talk about how good the apes are with nets?
Yeah, rifles and nets.
They have, like, magic nets. Like a piece of a net touches a human, and they just fall down.
Yeah, well, remember, the humans don't have shoes, right? That's a significant disadvantage, I don't know, at least to me. Maybe if you're running around with no shoes on all day long, it'd be different, but.
Yeah, but it'd be like they were wearing Vibrams.
I like those finger shoes.
Yes.
Yeah. No. Thank you. So we got one guy who's shot and killed, another guy who's knocked unconscious and captured, and Taylor who is shot in the neck.
Mm-hmm.
Throat.
So they capture and drag all these people back to the ape village, which the first script. Showed, bless you, showed, or had them living in like these ultra high tech buildings, but they decided to go the more, like, classic, more primitive architecture on purpose. Also made it easier to shoot that way. Yeah, and we have a little bit of heavy-handed commentary with humans being treated as animals.
A little bit of heavy? It's social commentary of humans as test subjects at the hands of the ape overlords as simian survival. That is not even subtle. It should have come with a PETA seal of approval.
Okay, I've got an etymology question. Does that relate to primates, or is the word primate related to primitive?
Well, they probably have the same root, right?
Yeah, I think so. It makes sense that they would. So when they refer to, like, primitive whatever, is that like an anti-monkey sentiment? Is that like,
no.
Is that like saying that, that like, oh, those dudes on horseback capturing those other dudes in nets is so gay? Like, that you couldn't get away with that. That'd be insensitive. But by calling the apes primitive, is that derogatory? I don't know.
The dictionary definition of primitive: relating to, denoting, or preserving the character of an early stage in the evolutionary or historical development of something.
Quote,
primitive mammals. Synonyms.
So primate is like primitive man.
Yeah.
Now, what is primate? As long as we're doing this, might as well do it all the way.
The definition of primate. The first definition, according to Merriam-Webster, a bishop who has a precedence in a province, a group of provinces, or a nation. Definition 2, archaic, one first in authority or rank. 3, Latin, any order of primates of mammals that are characterized especially by advanced development of binocular vision, resulting in stereoscopic depth perception, specialization of the hands and feet for grasping, and enlargement of the cerebral hemispheres, and that include humans, apes, monkeys, and related forms such as lemurs and tarsiers.
So humans are primates?
Yes.
Huh. Okay. Well, never mind then. So, dashed my whole theory there. Beep!
You can't just Fincher all over all that work Jason just did.
Fincher all over the work. I assume you're talking about David Fincher, but I don't know how you say... Why you call it Finchering?
That's how he broke Jake Gyllenhaal in Zodiac.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Well, he didn't keep asking me 8 times to just give 8 different definitions 5 different ways.
Do it again. Delete them all.
Okay. All right, so this is where we meet Dr. Zira, played by Kim Hunter, from A Streetcar Named Desire and Midnight and the Garden of Good and Evil, who is a chimpanzee scientist. By the way, there are three different types of apes in these movies. There are chimpanzees, who are pacifists and like the scientists. There are the orangutans, who are like the spiritual leaders and like, I guess they're more scientists too, I suppose.
But they're the lawgivers.
Yeah, they're like they're like the scholars and the clerics. And you got the guerrillas, who are the military, who are not pacifists.
Which is appropriate. Guerrilla military.
Yeah. Basically, Zira wants to keep Taylor alive because he seems to be more intelligent than the average human, and she wants to conduct experiments on him.
Well, she believes him to be domesticated, and her whole goal is to prove that they can be domesticated.
Yes.
So he fits the resolution of her hypothesis.
Well, every time he turns around, she gets a little bit.
Were you going for a total eclipse of the heart?
Yes, because he calls him Bright Eyes. So he can't speak because he's got a neck wound, and he's trying to communicate, but he gets thwarted. Not so subtly at every attempt. And then we meet Dr. Zayas, played by Maurice Evans from Bewitched and Rosemary's Baby. And he's the Minister of Science He's an orangutan, and he investigates the latest captured humans, and she points out Bright Eyes to him, and he's not convinced that he's anything special, and he's
an arrogant asshole.
Yeah, he's dismissive of her behavioral studies. Turns out he's got ulterior motives.
Well, and I figure at this point in the movie, I knew exactly what was going on.
Also, I still think Zaius is less of an asshole than Taylor.
Yeah, oh, yeah. I believe that.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, I agree.
Well, Zaius is trying to keep his entire society together in a cohesive manner. Taylor just is like, fuck the police, man.
Yeah, well, yeah, no, Taylor's like, fuck all these people. But yeah, no, it's a caste system with guerrillas as police, military, hunters, and workers, orangutans as administrators, politicians, lawyers, and religious clerics, and chimpanzees as intellectuals and scientists. And humans, who can't talk, are considered feral vermin, and are hunted for sport, and killed outright, enslaved for manual labor, or used for scientific experimentation.
A little Nazism going on.
Yeah. So, Zira provides Taylor with a human woman, Nova, played by Linda Harrison, from Cocoon and Cocoon 2. By the way, she also was having an affair and eventually got pregnant and married the producer of the movie.
Wow.
They were married for like 9 years, had a couple of kids, it was fine.
I assume the producer was married at the time?
Yes, yeah. I think he was a Zanuck, too. Of the Zanuck family?
There is no Mrs. Zanuck. Sorry, there is not Mrs. Zanuck, but it's Janik. Sorry, sneakers reference.
I was going to say, I don't understand that one either.
So I had a
tough night for Eric.
I'm all hopped up on the Tylenol. I got holes in my face. And
I had a question to myself out loud.
Please.
That I realized probably nobody could answer, but I thought, because if you know anything about the Screen Actors Guild, I thought, so did the actors and actresses get less royalties for this because they're non-speaking roles?
Yes. I don't know if it's just royalties, but also just base pay.
Yeah, their scale is lower because there's no speaking.
Yeah.
This was amusing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, let me tell you. Nova, the lady who played Linda Harrison, you know, she's, I guess, pretty and all that. She just comes off as kind of dumb. Not just like dumb, like can't speak, but dumb, like not very smart.
I was glad that she didn't bust out like the caveman zuga zuga.
It was close.
Also,
it was close.
In the notes, in the synopsis, it talks about how Taylor, even though Zira has provided Nova as basically a mate for Taylor, Taylor is he's too moralistic to do that.
No.
Yeah, no.
That is incorrect.
No. Yeah.
Yeah, I get the impression if he was too, A, he was too hung up on himself. Yes. And B, you know, clean up, honey, and maybe you get some of this later. But
He was getting around to it, but he hadn't given her the gift of his voice enough yet.
Exactly. Yes, he couldn't talk. You're right.
Before they were separated.
He was getting ready because he was shaven.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Well, even when they were in the cage, he was talking about all his former conquests. There was a lot of love making, but not a lot of love.
Yeah. Let's see.
He had a total eclipse of the heart.
Richard Zanuck. They're married from 69 to 78.
That's a good run.
Yeah, it's fine. His first wife thought it was a little bit much, but oh well. What can you do? So, anyway, we meet Zira again, I thought that both Kim Hunter and Roddy McDowell, and actually all the apes were pretty likable is maybe too strong of a word, but I don't know. I thought they were all more believable than Charlton Heston.
Absolutely. I believed them as a society.
Yeah. Yeah.
And had there not been the Taylor expedition intruding on their lives, I would have actually been interested to see the story of them.
Well, aren't you in for a treat?
Yeah, you're going to hear the story of them, that's for sure. Drew, have you jumped ahead and seen the other movies?
I tried to embark on a journey of watching all these movies, I want to say back when I was in high school. And I watched this one, and then I watched the second one. And then by the end of the second one, I was like, uh-uh. Nope.
Oh, so we're just going to rip open that scab.
I'm going to suggest that the third one will change your opinion about that. So far, all of the movies are different from one another in sometimes alarming ways, but I'm not going to go too far there. Again, next week we're going to talk about two other Planet of the Apes movies, right? And let me tell you, they are different from one another. I was late after watching them, I'm thinking, oh shit, we should have grouped this slightly differently, but no. I think the grouping will be fine. So we finally get Taylor talking.
I was surprised that his iconic line was an hour into the movie.
Oh, yeah. And it's, you know, humans don't talk. They're not developed enough to talk. So that's all causes a big stir. And this is, again, just before he says his iconic line, which is, take your stinking paws off me, you damn dirty apes. It's because he flees because he's about to be gelded. well,
that seems a reasonable reaction.
Yeah, exactly. So, as soon as he gets his voice back, he starts his monologuing again. they should have done something about the voice.
It was building up. He had to have a release.
Oh my God, he had musings. He had so much to muse about in the time that he had no voice. Now, granted, this is from three guys who are recording a podcast, so musing to ourselves pretty much is, you know, is we're familiar with that idea. But
well, let's pretend we're part of that ape tribunal and just ask a logical question: if the ape society is so advanced, why is it that none of them thought about shooting Taylor in the throat again?
Exactly. Yes. So. He's musing about the Earth and his life left behind. They take him to the National Ministry, and he's basically put on trial.
Is that before or after the It's a Madhouse?
Oh, I think it's during.
Okay.
Where he's talking about...
Another choice I did not understand.
Yeah, well, and
this is after the paper plane, right?
Yeah, well, there's that. But there's also, there's the in the tribunal... The three orangutans, and they're doing the hear no evil, see no evil, whatever. That was actually an ad lib, by the way, and they weren't going to use it. They just thought it was something funny to do, but the audiences laughed at it, and that was a good thing because they thought they was getting too serious at that point. So they kept it in for fun.
It was cringe inducing to see.
It was a little cringy, yes.
It's like so over the top. As if this movie wasn't already over the top. It just was like the garnish on top of the already crazy.
Well, and I, you know, the whole, he can't defend himself because he's not an ape, which is interesting. And I don't know. I mean, again, it's social commentary, but I thought it was kind of effective. And when he tries to prove that, no, there are other people, he's trying to verify his story, because even Cornelius, Roddy McDowell, who is, by the way, an architect and...
he's an architect or an archaeologist?
Yes, I'm sorry. He is an archaeologist. He's not an architect. It's all different. He's not Ape Vandelay or whatever. But no, he's...
Nice.
Yeah, that's all I could do. Anyway, so he... he has gone into the Forbidden Zone, because the way it works in the Planet of the Apes is you got the ape land, and then...
Didn't Taylor go in the Forbidden
Zone? Well, that's the thing. Taylor's craft crash-landed in the Forbidden Zone, so he came from the Forbidden Zone.
I was making a sexual reference, sorry.
Okay, sorry. So, but they don't believe his story, because he claims to be some sort of spaceman. Yeah, okay. And even Cornelius is like, no, he's clearly not a spaceman. But he could have come from the past, which is kind of weird. And because Cornelius has been to the Forbidden Zone and he's seen some things to indicate that in the past there has been Society of Humans. Now, in this movie, they don't talk about what happened between the human time and the ape time, right? They don't discuss that at all.
Okay. Nope.
Right. But they basically, as it turns out, skipping ahead a little bit, Zaius knows about this past. He knows about the humans having had the ability to have higher functions. It's just in his interest to keep it quiet.
Yeah, it's a power grab.
Yeah. And the fact that we see the lobotomy scar of the only remaining guy, because the black guy was stuffed and put in a museum.
Racist.
Speciesist, at least. So they think Taylor is just a nutball, maybe like an outlier, maybe, but a nutball. Nobody believes he's a spaceman, right?
Right.
None of the apes at all. Not even Zero or Crinny that think he's a spaceman. They're not sure what's up with him. He's certainly advanced in some ways, but oh well. Again, this is the first time they've ever heard of such a thing, a human that could talk. So, you know, they're working with what they have. Eventually, Zaius basically, in private, tells Taylor that his tribe probably came from the Forbidden Zone, but he says he comes from a distant planet far away, and they realize he's not going to budge from his story. So Zaius orders him back to the compound. And then we get the hippie beatnik guy, Lucius, who's Zira's hippie nephew.
He's the worst.
Well, this was a little on the nose.
Is he like the Jar Jar Binks?
Or Dobie Gillis.
That bad. He's the worst. I was disappointed he didn't get shot.
Jeez. Well, so Taylor's going to escape, and Zira and Cornelius and Lucius are going to help him escape, and they go on a horse-drawn carriage wagon thingy, and they go to the Forbidden Desert, and then Zaius and his group of soldiers arrive, and they have like a brief little encounter, and then Zaius and Cornelius decide to have a little debate.
A contest of knowledge.
Yes, yes. And then we have the finding of the doll, which I thought was kind of fun. Again, this is sort of heavy-handed, like Rod Serling, Twilight Zone kind of melodrama.
Yes.
But it works. Mama. Mama.
Creepiest doll.
Mama.
All dolls like that are creepy.
Yeah.
Boyfriend Jesse lost his shit at this point because he was yelling at the television that there were no clips in the guns.
They were ape guns.
There was no place for the bullets.
They were ape guns. That was the problem that Jesse had.
I think all the anger just came out at that point.
And then we have one of the sacred scrolls that they read that, where, again, this is the heaviest handed part of the whole thing, but it's still fun. And it's something that you need to remember because it's a theme about beware the beast man, for he is the devil's pawn. By the way, a lot of religiosity in this movie. Like this is 1968 or whatever. Mm-hmm. Religion is still kind of a big deal. Apparently it's still a big deal other places here in 2017 too.
The best way to control people without having any questioning is to impose religion upon them.
Yeah, but beware the beast man. Sorry, no, don't beware the beast man. Beware the beast man, for he is the devil's pawn. Alone among God's primates, he kills for sport or lust or greed. Yea, he will murder his brother to possess his brother's land. Let him not breed in great numbers, for he will make the desert a desert of his home and yours. Shun him, for he is the harbinger of death.
Shun the non-believer. Neither of you know what I'm talking about.
No, I don't. Okay. I thought you were going to go into a John Bowser Bauman riff about Sha-na-na. Yip, 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 do, 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 get a job.
When you do the yip, yip, yip thing, I think of the creepy aliens from Sesame Street.
blah, 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 blah. Taylor rides off into the sunset.
Zaius knew the whole time.
Yeah.
Doesn't give a shit.
Nope. Taylor gets a horse and a gun and a girl and is going to ride off and go to the Forbidden Zone and dance into the fire and whatever. Unfortunately, he rounds a bend and learns that, to his horror, he is not somewhere around Beetlejuice. He's in New Jersey. He looks and sees the Statue of Liberty all crumbled. And he says maniacs. Dude, basically, he's still shouting a monologue.
Yeah,
New Jersey?
Yeah, because he's gone from New Jersey to New York, the area where Ellis Island is.
Ah,
yeah.
I see. Gotcha.
As he's like, you maniacs, you finally blew it up. God damn you all to hell. So, again, it's a very time enough at last kind of Rod Serling ending.
Yes.
Never trust anyone over 30.
Yeah.
And he kisses Dr. Zara goodbye.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, and she's into it, too.
That must have been scandalous in 68.
Well, I mean, it was no Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, but it was... Yeah.
It's still Kim Hunter.
Yeah.
By the way, Eric, I found the DVD cover that you're talking about.
Yeah.
That is pretty horrible.
Is the worst?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, you can't do that. I think I first learned of the ending of this movie not from watching the movie, but from a coloring book when I was a child. It's like great horror movies or great monster movies or whatever. Still, it's an iconic image. Don't get me wrong. It's a great image. I like it. I like it a lot. This, though, is not... Like, so far, this is kind of the least of the Planet of the Apes movies so far, in my estimation. So, I think you guys are going to have a fun time this next couple weeks. So, any other thoughts, hopes, dreams, and frustrations?
Jason, you mentioned the score in the beginning. It was so bizarre. I felt like this entire movie was like a Star Trek fight scene when it came
yes.
to the soundtrack.
It was like some strange 60s experimental music class.
Yes, yes. And it was also all the weird angles. Like that mm-hmm. was another big point in this movie. They had all those strange angles, but no, I mean, a lot of the movie is just like the backgrounds are one color, so maybe the angles are a little bit wasted. There were no Hitchcock bars over the people's shadows over the people's faces.
Well, there was no subtlety in this movie.
Yeah.
There was no nuance. It was all in your face. All in your face all the time.
Yep.
And Heston was just over the top.
That's the
he
thing.
He was overacting it up like, way too much. I think if he had ratcheted it back, even just a third of the way, it might have made this better.
Like his ending thing where he screams, well, actually, okay, so get your hands off me, you damn dirty apes. That was fine. And at the end when he's talking about, God damn you all to hell, that would have been fine if every other piece of dialogue in the movie wasn't said in that very same tone. Like, Stardate 4556-4.5.
Also, what made them dirty apes? What made them dirty? They were,
He's a racist.
That's just human
He's
prejudice.
He's an asshole.
Yes, I know.
Learned from Bowling from Columbine, if you give apes guns, or anyway, that wasn't fair of either me or Michael Moore. Yeah, so if they had an actor, I don't know, say a Robert Walker level actor, or a, I don't know, who else would be good? Something in the range of a, I don't know, just a little more subtlety. I mean, you wouldn't want a Jimmy Stewart.
Peter O'Toole.
There you go. If it was a Peter O'Toole, Helen Mirren, well, that was Caligula at that same time, right? No, we don't want to. Never mind.
That movie was a little over the top,
too. Yeah, yeah. Although there was less midget fucking in Planet of the Apes. Yeah, so some sort of, yeah, someone with a little more subtlety. That's all I'm saying.
I don't know. It's, I don't know. If it was more subtle, it might just seem bad.
Maybe.
Because going this big seemed like a definite choice.
Yeah. But not everybody went so big.
Thankfully.
Yeah. I'm not gonna say anything about the future movies. Maybe I should have waited before I watched them, but yeah. So, Brother Jay, I think you already gave it a B. Is that what your final score is?
I'd give it a B minus.
What was the game at the end? That's really generous. Did you have to decide whether you were a chimpanzee, an orangutan, or a gorilla?
I never got that far because the game locked up and crashed on my Blu-ray player.
Uh-oh.
But I made it to the second round, and I was I could either go towards the mountains or towards the stream.
Is it Adventures in the Forbidden Zone?
That's where I was headed.
Yeah. So, Drew, was it worth it?
Yeah, I think this movie's worth it. I mean, it's a bizarre movie. Like, when I describe all the pieces, parts, it sounds like I don't like it. Or if I were to, like, count how many times I rolled my eyes while watching it, it would seem like an indication that I didn't like it. But at the end of it, I liked it. I mean, it was silly. It was over the top, completely ham-fisted, literally ham-fisted in the final scene. But, I don't know. I liked it. I mean, it's a campy science fiction movie. I mean, it's pretty good. And the makeup, like Jason mentioned in the very beginning, the makeup, I think, still holds up. Some of the masks move better than the others. But I think the actors in the ape makeup and costumes did a really good job. And I think it still looks really good.
Oh, yeah. No, Roddy McDowall especially. Like, the little nuances and things, the little, like, looks and the movement they do. I mean, granted, there was a lot of extras in makeup. And a lot of the extras probably were just had a big old flabby mask on and some hands. But a lot of the face work on, like, Kim Hunter and Roddy McDowall was great. And the orangutans, and to a lesser extent, the gorillas in this movie.
Yeah, like I said, I think it's important. If you haven't seen this, it's definitely something you should see. But you have to watch it with the prism of this was made in 68. You have to just kind of concede some of that. And if you can get past that, you can enjoy this movie. If you take this movie and try and equate it to something that you've seen in the last 5 years, you will be disappointed. It will frustrate you and disappoint you.
This is the equivalent of na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na Batman compared to what we now know as Batman, which is why I'll be intrigued to see the newer movies, because I haven't seen any of the newer movies, so we'll see.
I am Batman.
And when we see Helena Bonham Carter being an ape and stuff, it's going to be exciting.
What?
Sorry, spoiler.
Paul Giamatti.
I didn't know about Paul Giamatti. I'm not going to even tell you about who's coming up in the next movies. It's fun, though. And I'm excited for next week. I can't wait to talk to you about about Beneath and Escape.
Are we doing them all in a row?
These five we are, I think.
Oh, so we're doing two next week and two the week after.
Yep.
Oh, okay.
And then we're just spacing out the new movies a little bit. Yeah, anyway, I enjoyed this. I thought it was I was a little dubious when boyfriend Jesse suggested we tackle all of the Planet of the Apes movies, because I remembered it being a little bit more cheesy. But now, if you look at it, just take my advice and, again, keep your expectations a little bit low as far as the technological aspect of it and the pacing a little bit. But they do some world building here, which I find intriguing. Like, they keep a thread going. it's a strange thread sometimes, but they keep the thread going. So,
doesn't one of them have the apes going to present day Earth?
That would be number three.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I'll let you do with it. I liked number three a lot. It's not what I thought it was going to be when I first started watching it. The first half an hour of that movie is bonkers and leads you to believe it's going to be one kind of movie that is not. Send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com or call us on our new voicemail account to leave voice messages, or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts. Dial it already.